What is up, ladies and gentlemen? It is Mercules here. Welcome to the Massive Breakdown Podcast, episode 32. We are coming to you live on a Sunday night. It's going to be a very, very short episode, or at least we think it's going to be a short episode for you guys this week. We've had a couple of things come up. Number one, for the first time in a long time, I have to go out of town on business. It's not something I've had happen ever. I think since I've started recording the podcast, I've never had it happen, but now my new job is requiring me to go to a conference, so I have to leave Tuesday morning bright and early. As such, I'm not going to have a lot of time to edit. Cougar still has family in town, so he is not going to make it with us, so it is up to me and Kutch to discuss with you a couple of things that have come up this week, a little bit of news about E3, a little bit of changes Josh Hamrick discussed that are going to be coming to the Crucible. We're going to go over all that. We're going to talk about Iron Banner. Let's call it a miscellaneous episode, but let's get the introductions out of the way first. Like I said, I am Mercules, joined today, and always, by Kit Kutcha. How are you doing tonight?
Doing excellent, man. I've just been trolling people this weekend with Universal Remote and Crow's Eye just running around acting like I've got a hand cannon and a regular shotgun. And I'm having fun. I'm a little sick, so I've been hanging out at home a lot and really enjoying myself.
All right, excellent. Well, I'm sorry to hear that you're a little bit sick, but I'm glad to hear that you've been enjoying yourself. So
yeah.
I guess without Cougar here to tell us how he's been, we can hop right into it. First things first, most basic news to come out of this week at Bungie was that Iron Banner will be coming back on Tuesday. It's going to be Supremacy this time, and we've got the sniper rifle and the hand cannon for sale. I'm going to talk about the hand cannon, but Kutch, do you have anything to say about the sniper rifle before we get into it?
I honest to goodness could not even remember what the sniper rifle was for Iron Banner. So I had to look it up here, and the Laughing Heart, it's just not something, I guess, that really jumps out at me as being anything too exciting. It does have pretty good stats overall. It's probably reasonably comparable to a Defiance of Yasmin in a lot of ways, so it's not bad, but it's not... I guess it's not really the archetype that people prefer, so...
Nope. It's one of those faster rate of fire. It's like the Defiance of Yasmin. Obviously, it can roll with a different perk set. It actually has a pretty decent perk set, but I'm not as big a fan of the sight as I am on the Defiance of Yasmin. The Defiance of Yasmin has a really, really open sight picture. It's very easy for quick scoping. It's basically just a super easy weapon to use overall. The Laughing Heart is kind of just a poor man's version of it the majority of the time, with the possibility to roll better perks, is what I'll say. So 98% of the time, it's going to be worse than Defiance of Yasmin, but if you get a god roll, it might be better. But let's face it, even with snipers, in my opinion, being a little bit more well-represented in the Crucible recently, I don't think it's that great of a weapon overall. I just honestly, that archetype in general just seems to be in the weird place in between not high enough impact to really do consistent, you know, body shot kills on someone who's been damaged, but not low enough impact, not high enough rate of fire to really, really enjoy the benefits of two tapping someone. In my opinion, it's not a great weapon. I guess that's the conclusion I'll draw from it.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. And just, I guess, to kind of do the massive breakdown thing and give you guys some numbers. This is a 26, 22 sniper rifle, rate of fire 26, impact 22, so it's 334 damage on crits, 134 on bodies, and that's what you're talking about there, Merc, where the body shot damage is just not enough to really clean up kills on a consistent basis. If somebody's just caught a little bit of damage, you may not finish them off reliably, whereas with a higher impact sniper rifle, you're going to be able to clean those up a lot more consistently, where you're doing maybe 160 body damage on the next archetype up. So, or I guess 156, my mistake there. I guess it depends on if it has barrel perks or not, so I get those confused. But regardless, enough more that it really does matter. So,
speaking of barrel perks, the Laughing Heart does have those, but all it does is bump up the critical damage to 342 from 334 and the body shot damage by measly 3. It goes to 137 from 134. So, like I said, just all around not a great gun. But moving on to something, hand cannons. We're getting the Lingering Song this week, and we don't know what the vendor is going to grace us with, what role the vendor is going to grace us with. But I have to highly, highly recommend this weapon for Iron Banner. There's a couple of reasons. One, it already does 95 damage to the head. If you are at level 400, which means obviously all of your armor, all of your weapons are at 400, and your opponents are anywhere below 400 total, you therefore increase the damage you do to them with the Lingering Song. You could do 96 damage to the head, 97 damage to the head. Every time that number goes up by one, you gain the ability to two-tap another opponent. Because the benefit of the Lingering Song is that at 95 damage, it can already two-tap enemies who are 3 armor or less. So like I said, every time they're beneath you and you do more damage, they could be at 5 armor, they could be at 7 armor, you might be two-tapping them now. It is a fantastic, fantastic tool for that. In addition, it actually can roll 2 perks at the same time that decrease mag size. If I'm not mistaken, and I don't have this pulled up and I should, but I believe it's Braced Frame for sure.
That's right.
And Feather Mag, maybe?
That is.
I'm not sure. Is that what it is? It decreases the magazine size to increase the reload speed?
That's correct. It's got both Braced Frame and Feather Mag available in separate columns, which means you can get the magazine down to 4, I believe, is the minimum.
It is four. And that's wonderful because it can also roll Luck in the Chamber in another separate slot. So you can have a magazine size of 4, Luck in the Chamber, and it's guaranteed to roll with iron sights that increase aim assist, the iron lordly sights. So you are going to be two-tapping everybody if you can get one of those perfect rolls. It is not a gun I would recommend taking outside of light level enabled playlist other than for the laughs, but in light level enabled playlist, as long as you are 400, it is a very, very competent weapon. So I highly recommend picking this one up. If the past is any indicator, we're going to get 2 out of those 3 perks that we need at the vendor roll. And I'm just saying that I know it might not happen that way, but in the past, we have almost always gotten a near perfect roll, or what I like to call a 3/4 roll from the vendor, from the Iron Banner vendors. It gives people right off the bat a decent weapon, but it still makes those people who want the perfect roll chase it. So let's hope we get something like that.
Let's put a little wager on it here. I'm going to bet that we get probably not Luck in the Chamber. I'm going to say that we do not get Luck in the Chamber on the Lingering Song at the vendor roll. And if I'm wrong, then I guess, I don't know, what do I get, a bunch of cat memes? What's the punishment?
I don't know. I will publicly humiliate myself on Twitter by playing, I don't know. By going into the Crucible with an unleveled character, and I will play 5 games and stream them. And I will try to censor my ultimate rage as I get beat down by everything. I will start with a Kvostov and whatever white sniper rifle I get at the beginning and no heavy, and I will go into the Crucible in the current state and play 5 games. But I think we are going to get Luck in the Chamber, so if that's what happens, then we'll say that you have to do that instead.
That's fair. Yeah, I do have my original guns from my my second character. So I've still got that's a scout. No, oh, I dismantled my Kvostov to get the exotic Kvostov.
Well, you'll have to start a new account.
I do have a 12 attack scout rifle, and I do have a 5 attack shotgun, and a 17 attack rocket launcher. So I can totally, and I guess I'm saying attack, I mean light. So I can totally do this. I will take you up on that, Mercules.
So speaking of this, I actually had a wonderful idea for a tournament a while back, and I know I talked to you about this.
Yeah.
Where everybody plays, you can pick a hunter, a warlock, or a titan. They have to be unleveled. You cannot unlock anything on the subclass. No grenades, no double jumps, no supers, nothing. Nothing can be unlocked on the subclass. That means the only differences between the subclasses would be their base melee ranges, their base agility, their base armor, and their base recovery. That would be the only differences. And then the only weapons you could play with would be white weapons, meaning realist actual white weapons, not the gunsmith whites, like the Duke Mark 10, stuff like that. You'd have to determine whether or not you could use heavy. Because I think machine guns would dominate heavy at low levels like that, because all the rocket launchers suck. But I think a tournament like that would be amazing, and I really, really badly want to set one up. I just haven't gotten around to it. But at some point, I'm going to set up a tournament where it's all unleveled characters, all white weapons, and I want to see how it goes from there. I think it'd make Destiny so much play so much differently if there were no abilities or anything like that.
It would be very, very different. Yeah, I think, you know, I think there are probably some people who'd be really interested to see what that feels like, and some people are probably like, "No, I need my Nova Bomb." And yeah, I would go for it. I would try it. I would give it a shot. 'Cause I actually had a lot of fun when I rebuilt my Warlock, going into the Crucible with nothing unlocked, and running around and just not unlocking my abilities. I had a single jump. I kept forgetting that I had a single jump, so that was pretty unfortunate several times. But it really teaches you to use your gun, I think.
Yeah, and it would completely change the way map movement works. When you can't double jump over stuff, map movements would become so much, like choke points would matter a lot more basically when you can't just hurdle yourself over things. I think it'd be fantastic. So if anyone out there who's listening wants to take part in a tournament with unleveled subclasses and white weapons only, let me know. We'll run through some custom games, try to get it going. I absolutely would like to see it, and I would probably run it in the 4v4 format that we've got right now, more than likely. So if you guys think you'd be interested in that, let me know on Twitter, and let's try to make this thing happen.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of potential for really a lot more experimentation in the tournament scene. Right now, I guess I feel like there are a lot of rules in some specific areas, and then there's just kind of a lot of other things are left wide open, and I don't really see. And maybe it's just that that's where the demand is. You know, I think ultimately some of it probably comes down to a little bit of good old capitalism. People want to play a certain way, and so that's the way that they play. But you know, I'd like to see, I guess, more experimentation, more things along the lines of. I think there's been a Sparrow Racing tournament recently. I think Crucible Radio put on. I've seen some other talk of interesting ideas. I'd like to see some stuff with fixed loadouts, or at least a limited pool of loadouts. So I'd like to see something like a Faction Wars tournament where you can only purchase weapons from vendors. Maybe teams would have to align with a specific faction and only use their weapons. Maybe they could have one player from each faction. I think there's a lot of things you could do along those lines to sort of narrow the pool of weapons without taking away people's abilities. And that, I guess that's just kind of an idea I've been kicking around in my head. I don't know if it's something that people would be interested in, or if they'd be like, "Oh, Kit, go back to PvE." Nobody wants to hear that. So I don't know. I just feel like I'd love to see kind of some more experimentation with themed tournaments, and so since we were on the subject, I had to pitch it, had to throw it out there.
One of the biggest issues with those limited set pool tournaments is that if there is an optimal weapon, all of the tryhards are going to find that and use that and abuse it. So you kind of have to make it like a custom tournament where it's not casual friendly, is I guess how I'd say it. Casual friendly. That way you don't just have a bunch of very, very highly skilled Crucible players in there who just absolutely all pick the exact same weapon from the exact same faction and then just dominate it. Because you'd have no variety then at that point in time. I think that's what you'd run into.
So then ultimately it might be something where it would be better to have one player, you know, if you had, say, a team of three, one player from each team would have to choose a different faction so that they couldn't all have the same loadout. Now you might end up with a lot of the same sets of loadouts, but at least you wouldn't be getting killed by the same gun every single time.
Well, you know, an idea I've thought about for the big tournaments that are out there right now is no bans on anything at all, with the exception of you can only have one of each class per team. So your team composition has to be Titan, Warlock, Hunter. You have no other options besides Titan, Warlock, Hunter, but then nothing is banned outside of that. And I think that'd be an interesting way to make up a tournament. I'd be interested to see the combinations that people come up with there.
Yeah, I can definitely. I mean, I can feel some people's wheels turning, maybe grinding a little bit about thoughts about Defender Titans and the whole. I know there's been some controversy there that I don't want to get into, but yeah, I think that would be kind of an iconic. I mean, that's really an iconic fire team for Destiny, right? Like that's what we see in the live action commercials and the cinematics. We see a fire team of three, one of each class. And that's really, I think, very core to kind of the Destiny brand feeling. And so that would be interesting to see what combinations people come up with. But I do think that we would see quite a few Blessing of Light golden guns running around and Blessing of Light Stormcallers. And I'm okay with that because everyone can do it. And if we can all do it, then it's fair in my mind. And probably some people, again, are going to just disagree with me and tell me to go back to PvE, but that's fine.
Well, everyone who hates Scory will disagree with you. But superior transition here. Yes. Speaking of Scory, Josh Hamrick came out and has apparently decided to become the mouthpiece for Bungie towards the players, towards the community, talking about changes in the Crucible. He has been a veritable fountain of information over the last couple weeks. Many thanks to Josh. He has been absolutely awesome, engaging in discussion with the community. And in this week at Bungie, he actually gave us a lot about what he's been looking at, what they've been thinking of doing, the changes they are going to make to the Crucible. Do you want to go one by one and just go back and forth and kind of read them off?
Yeah, let's do it. And again, I got to just reiterate what you said there. I just have a huge appreciation for what Josh Hamrick has been doing on Twitter and in the in this week at Bungie now as well. He's been answering a ton of questions from everybody, including some people who've been somewhat confrontational about things. He's really handled it very, very well, totally bucking the trend in terms of people putting their feet in their mouth. He's just been doing some fantastic work. He's answered a bunch of questions for us, a bunch of questions for other people. It's been super read. So let's dig into what he said this time. I'll take sidearms here, and then you can take Scory, and we'll go from there.
All right.
So sidearms, in a not entirely shocking development, I'm not going to read the whole thing that way, but the sidearm meta has grown strong. So Josh acknowledges the Wyrmwood predominance going on right now. And so they are working on a change that would allow sidearms to continue to spawn with a small set amount of ammo post-death, but keep them from stacking anything extra, which is, of course, what we've seen on Reddit. I think every other post on some days is saying this exact thing right here. Just, you know, let them spawn in. Don't let them stack the ammo up. So I think that probably is a totally fair change. It'll change the way that I use sidearms a little bit, but not a ton. But it will definitely make me more aware of that special ammo than I currently have to be with my Crow's Eye.
I mean, I think it just keeps them from being a little bit ridiculous. I mean, letting them spawn in with ammo is what's basically making them competitive in the Crucible right now. But letting them pick up ammo and then spawn in with all of that too was just overkill.
Absolutely.
So this is just normalizing it as far as it goes. It's a great change in my opinion. It's not going to totally shift things 100%, but it is going to, like you said, make you a little bit more conscious when you're running with a sidearm.
Yeah. There have been a few cases, particularly in Rumble, when I've run kind of low on my sidearm ammo. And so that's kind of forced me to be a little bit aware of picking those up. But when I'm playing sixes or even threes, I generally finish with at least 60 plus rounds for my sidearm, sometimes over 100. So I'm glad that they are looking at this. I hope that that change goes straight into the game as is.
Second change, and the one that probably is the most sought after in the Crucible right now, the Memory of Scory. This artifact has led to some of the greatest dance parties I've ever attended, and what he means by that is people camping in the back of the map building up their supers. Basically, you have to get a kill now to jumpstart Scory's ability, and it only will start it for a minute. Once a minute ends, it no longer speeds up your super cooldown, and you have to get another kill to start it again. They say in PvE, this won't be a problem. Of course, you're going to be getting a kill every minute. That's easy. So in PvE, no problem at all. In PvP, specifically Trials, You might not be getting a kill every minute if you're one of those people who sits in the back and camps. And at this point in time, if you get a kill in trials, what are you going to do? Run away and go back to the back of the map and charge your super when you were just man up or, you know, whatever's going on. I think this is a great change. I'm interested to see how it plays out because I feel like there's a lot of variables that you might not be able to see, but this is a fantastic idea from the start. And I really think it's going to discourage a lot of the scory camping.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. The trials meta has really shifted to a very kind of a set thing right now. I've been looking at some stats out there, and I think everybody, of course, knows that No Land Beyond and Wyrmwood are super dominant. Memory of Skorri is also really common, although there's a lot of Memory of Gelion and Memory of Yolder mixed in there as well. But Skorri is just very frustrating for people to play against because it encourages that really passive play style that plays the round to time to build up super and then forces you, if you're not camping, it forces you to try to push against somebody who's holding a superior position, which is not a good position to be in. So I'm really happy about this change.
So speaking of that, people don't like passive play styles in Destiny. This is evidenced by how much the sniper meta, however brief, was absolutely hated. It's evidenced by how much the Skorri meta is hated. It's evidenced by how much the defender meta was hated in the one tournament showed up in. People don't like passive playstyles in Destiny, but it hasn't always been that way. Back in year one, and even a little bit into year two, a passive playstyle was an outlier, but it was not looked down upon the way it is now. And the reason why is because aggressive playstyles were so much more effective that it actually took quite a bit of skill. It wasn't easier to be a passive player. If anything, it was easier to be an aggressive player. Passive players often got the short end of the stick. When Bungie decreased the effectiveness of aggressive weapons, of quick time to kill weapons that were primaries, passive metas became much more prevalent. They became much more easy to do and simultaneously more difficult to combat. And that's when people started hating the passive metas. A great game, a well-balanced game, has a perfect amount of aggressive and passive play styles, basically. And they complement each other. When you shift it too far one way or the other, people don't like that. For a while, we had both. Then it shifted to way hardcore aggressive. Then it shifted to way passive. Actually, I guess technically it shifted to way passive first with the snipers. Then it shifted to way aggressive with the ape warriors. And now, you know, now the meta's been shaken up a little bit. We'll see where it lands. But I just thought that was an interesting point. I figured I'd throw it in there because as someone who's been a passive player, not Skorri's camper, I don't do that, but just as a sniper player and not a hard charging quickscoping sniper, I don't use No Land Beyond. I've been a passive player from the beginning of the game, and the amount of salt that is generated towards me has increased as the times to kill have slowed down on primary weapons. Because before, it used to be easier for me to get killed as a passive player. Now it's actually easier for me to play as a passive player. I don't think it's good for the game. I want to say that. I don't think it's good for the game. But it is easier for me to play as a passive player at this point in time. And people hate that. People absolutely hate it. They think it's a no-skill strategy where you just sit in the back of the map and you do nothing. But I just thought I'd throw that out there. A little personal anecdote for me.
I think that's a good point in that the meta kind of seems to rubber band a little bit sometimes where it bounces a little too far one way or the other. And I know they're trying to find the right mix to keep people happy or to keep people interested. And I think that's a much tougher job than, you know, we as players sometimes realize. But one thing that we, I think, can say is that we are going to find, you know, as players in PvP, we're going to find the most effective strategy for us. And the most effective strategy for a lot of players is going to be the most effective strategy overall. So, you know, we've got a whole lot of, you know, with all of these stats and times to kill and ease of use, we've got a whole lot of things that are putting pressure on players to choose one weapon or another. And that's how we settle on the meta ultimately, right? We balance all those factors and we pick the weapons that we feel are going to be effective. Whether they encourage a passive or an aggressive playstyle isn't necessarily something that I think we always think about. Now, I typically prefer to play very aggressive. It's just more fun for me. I'd rather, you know, I'd rather go in there trading kills and occasionally come out ahead than I would sitting back playing it safe. I just get bored playing that way, and that's just me. That's my personality. So for me, I tend to pick the most effective rushing weapons. Obviously, Merc, you're like 100% on the opposite side of the spectrum there for me, which is something that I am glad that there are effective weapons on that end of the spectrum. But I think that I'd really like to see a little bit more consciousness of how these factors or how the changes that they make in PvP affect what weapon choices we're going to make. Now, maybe Bungie saw all of these things coming. Maybe Josh saw these things coming. You know, the Snowland Beyond Wormwood meta in Trials. You know, maybe they saw the sniper meta coming. I don't know. They haven't told us. But the impression that they give is not that is that they don't see it. That's the impression that players take away, and I think that is one of the things that causes some loss of confidence. So I'm really excited that they're communicating more. I hope that this communication leads to them maybe being a little bit more open about what they think changes are actually going to do, and hopefully that'll lead to a greater dialogue as we kind of give them feedback.
The rubber banding stems from them doing something we've discussed before, which is double nerfing and double buffing when they do stuff. They always it's because they don't do a lot of balance patches. And we said this before, but if they were to just do one change, although things may be more balanced, there'd be no change in the meta. People wouldn't immediately see a change. They wouldn't see how different things are. So they double nerf something or they double buff something. And it has the intended side effect of crushing something or making something OP. And they've done this for a long time. The first time I really, really noticed it was when the Hopscotch Pilgrim archetype of pulse rifles had been buffed, but they weren't king in the meta before. They nerfed, I believe, hand cannons and auto rifles in the same patch, and they also preemptively nerfed pulse rifles. And people were like, why the hell did they nerf pulse rifles? Pulse rifles weren't even good. It's because they foresaw that pulse rifles would be the next kings of the meta when auto rifles and hand cannons were nerfed. And sure enough, that's the way it ended up playing out. And I remember seeing that in my head and thinking, I know they're going to nerf autos. I know they're going to nerf hand cannons. Pulse rifles are going to be damn good. I started stocking up on pulse rifles. They nerfed pulse rifles anyways before they even got a chance to be good. It's like they wanted to head it off at the pass. That one may have worked out a little bit, but subsequent ones have worked out not so well. And as far as seeing the meta happening, they have to see it. I mean, we, the community, as players who spend way less time actually studying the game, predicted exactly what this meta was going to be.
Oh, yeah.
Before the patch notes even came out, just from the stream, we knew exactly what was going to happen. And it happened. You know, so they have to see it. I just wonder whether they want to see if the community falls into line. I don't really know what it is, but they have to see it. They couldn't not. I mean, anyone could have seen, sidearms are going to keep their ammo and no land beyond isn't getting nerfed. Well, those two guns are going to be very, very powerful.
Yeah, I agree. I do think that they have to. I just have to wonder, I guess, you know, and maybe this is just one of those questions that we'll have to wait for an interview to get an answer on. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge. But I just have to wonder what they feel about that. If they're okay with that, if they're already looking ahead to the next balance patch. And you know, to a certain extent, if this is the meta for now, I'm okay with this being the meta for now. It is different than what it used to be. So there's that for us. Anyway, you know, it's a change. We should keep moving though. We've got on this tangent, and we've got on a lot of tangents as we usually do, and that's the truth. Oh-ho, Master Sieg.
There's another nice transition, but truth. Yeah, this one's very, very near and dear to my heart. They over-nerfed truth. Again, not only did they take away tripod, but instead of bringing it down to 2, they brought it down to 1. There's an over-nerf. It's a double nerf. So they say that we went too far on this. They're not going to push the magazine size up to 2. They're going to put one more rocket in your backpack and then bump truth up to the max rocket launcher reload speed. I'm actually happier with this because it means that instead of getting two rockets in the same clip, which would be nice, I'm going to have three rockets total. That means one more opportunity for me to get a kill, but it's going to be a little bit harder for me to get all three kills because I'm going to have to reload in between every single one. I'm actually happy with this change. You know, I like my three rockets. I purposely use rocket launchers in the Crucible that enable me to get three rockets. It's why I use Tormod's Bellows over the Suros JLB 47. The Suros JLB 47 is better across the board stat-wise, except for rate of fire. But the Tormod's Bellows gives me three rockets. That's three kills. The JLB 47 is only two. And I need those three rockets. I use them. So I'm happy with this. It's going to be harder to use, but I'm going to switch back because I'm almost ashamed to admit this, but I've actually been running Sleeper Simulant in my heavy slot instead of instead of running Truth. Yeah, I switched over to it, so it doesn't always work out well. Sometimes it's humiliating, but there's nothing more fun than seeing like a 670 damage headshot pop up on someone.
It is hilarious when it works. So yeah, I'm happy that they are looking at rolling that back a little bit for Truth as well. Truth was, as it is for many of you listening, I have no doubt, my go-to rocket launcher for a long time. And it's I still use it a little bit just because it's still Truth, but it just doesn't feel like it's worth the exotic slot anymore. It's kind of like, hell, I could just run my Ash Factory and it's pretty much the same, except I'll have three rockets. So yeah, I think, you know, with that max reload speed, with that extra rocket in the backpack, Truth will be back, but it maybe won't be quite as brutally effective as it was. It'll just be good, and I'm happy with that.
Speaking of brutally effective, one of the weapons that we mentioned before being dominant in the meta is about to get a little bit of that Nerf hammer bopping it on the head, and this is one I will promise you, despite the community's collective sigh of holy shit, they're really nerfing this weapon. No Land Beyond is going to now have flinch like every other sniper in the game. I think this is a great change, and the community's problem with it seems to stem from the fact that No Land Beyond in year one was the worst weapon in the game, and now it's considered OP. Well, no, it's not considered OP. All right, what happens is, just like with Universal Remote, other weapons get nerfed around it and brought down. But the point being, it doesn't matter how bad this weapon was in year one. It's not bad now.
Right.
And it is an outlier, a significant outlier in the fact that it is a one-hit kill from almost any distance that has no flinch. Yes, it has visual flinch. We all know it has visual flinch. But the shot still goes in the direct dead center. That's really, really annoying. This is a good change, regardless of how much people say, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening. This is a good change. It needed to happen. It was very, very hard to contest good No Land Beyond players. And as we've known for months now, because we were talking about this a long time ago, if you can get good with the No Land Beyond, it is a very, very effective weapon. And what's happened is, as the meta has shifted, people have decided, it's time to get good with the No Land Beyond. And they have, in droves.
Yep.
And it's this is a great change, in my opinion.
Just for quick reference, I had a friend at Destiny Trials Report pull the loadouts in terms of like perks and weapons for a number of basically the winning Trials players, like the best players on the winning teams in Trials from last weekend. And 1 in 10 players, a little more than that actually, but roughly 1 in 10 players had No Land Beyond equipped as their primary in Trials for the sample size, which was, the sample size on that is 276,000. So it's not a small sample size. This is pretty representative of Trials. So yeah, it's popular.
And then the very last change, Blink, another example of when they did, actually in this case, they did three consecutive nerfs to Blink? Well, consecutive, it's like five consecutive nerfs to Blink, but recently it's been three.
Yeah.
The weapon ready speed was cut down drastically. That annoys me more than anything else. Recovery, it takes away, I believe, two recovery when you select Blink now. That is kind of annoying, but more fair to me. And then they also made it remove the HUD time. So nerf after nerf after nerf, nobody was even using Blink after the last nerfs to it. And then the removing the HUD time was just like, holy shit, I was one of the last people on Earth using Blink, and even I'm not using it now because that's so annoying. So what they're doing is they're giving back the recovery that it took away, just taking it off, and they're shrinking the time that your HUD is invisible for when you blink. I'm happy with these changes. I don't think it's going to make Blink competitive again, because although the HUD time is annoying as hell, the recovery wasn't what people were upset about. It was the weapon ready speed. So I don't think it's going to make it competitive, but I am happy that they're rolling it back a little bit.
Yeah, for me, the recovery penalty on top of everything else, I mean, I'm glad to see that getting returned at least, because while it's not really a big deal on my Voidwalker, on my Blade Dancer, that leaves me with like no recovery at all, which is fine because I know how to use cover, but it's kind of boring sitting there in cover waiting for like 5 seconds for my health to regen and then for my shield to regen. So at the very least, you know, if I choose to use Blink again, which I'm not sure that I will, at least I can spend a little less time sitting around. So that's what I would say about that, I guess. And finally, Nutty McNutface is a lazy name for a squirrel, and you all know it. Can't argue with that.
And I think this is the first time in a long time where every single change coming in a patch will be a change that I'm happy about. Granted, these are changes that are coming because of mistakes they made in the past, but at least they're taking steps to fix them instead of just ignoring them or leaving them be. I think it's the first time in a long time, combined with the health regen changes, that I will be happy about every single change that is coming, unless they pop some more stuff on us that we have no idea what's happening. Every single thing they've mentioned so far, I'm happy about.
I would bet you a dollar that they might add a couple of things in there that they haven't mentioned yet. But for me, the big takeaway here is that, you know, Bungie has said for a long time, and this has come from Deej and Cosmo and all kinds of people, that they do read the forums, that they are listening, and Josh has kind of come out here and, I mean, he's gotten a lot of flack, a lot of very unfair flack in a lot of ways. He's got a tough job, and he's got to make decisions, and half of us are going to hate half of his decisions, and the other half are going to hate the other half. So he's pretty much hosed on that front, which is not to say that I agree with all of the decisions that he made. Of course, I do, you know, disagree with at least half of them. But that said, he's come out and just acknowledged point by point by point all of the criticisms that have been leveled at that balance patch, including flat-out satire of himself and Greg Ping on Reddit. So I guess, and he did it, you know, I think he took it on in a positive way. This is not something that came out as condescending. This is not something that came out as, oh, you guys are whiners, which is something I've seen from other game developers on other games. People can get very defensive. You know, they put a lot of time and work into this. This is their job and their livelihood, and getting attacked for that can definitely make a person defensive. So regardless of what happens down the road, I just have to again reiterate the respect I have for what he's doing in terms of putting his name out there, because he's not the community guy. So that I think is awesome, and I agree, along with the health regen tuning or retuning after the accidental tuning, I think this is going to be a really exciting balance patch to look forward to down the road whenever it comes.
Overall, just excited about it. And like you said, Josh has every single question I asked him about the patch, including issues that I had with it. He straight up responded to it with what he thought, whether or not he thought it was a valid criticism. And for the most part, I have to give respect back to the community too. The majority of the community people interacting with him did so very respectfully. Yeah. Which isn't something we've always seen from our community. And it was nice to see, because Josh even said himself, he says, as long as people come to me well-mannered and polite, I have no problem discussing things about the game with people. And he did that. And it was wonderful. So moving on from the changes to some news that actually came out today. And we have to say we have to point out that this is unverified. But if I'm going to throw my hat in the ring, I think very much that it is real. It is the floor plans for E3 this year. And they show Activision Publishing Inc., which last year did not have a booth at E3 at all, has a massive, massive booth in the main area this year. And what that leads me to believe is that Destiny 2 will be revealed at E3 this year. That's my thought process. I've always thought Destiny was going to be revealed at E3, anyways, because that just seems to be Bungie's schedule recently. They reveal at E3, they hype the entire summer, they release in September. But this lends credence to that, I believe.
Yeah, I definitely took this with a grain of salt when I first saw it. Of course, we've seen a lot of claims leveled in the past about Destiny 2 will be this or that, and people drawing conclusions from very limited pieces of information, like Mega Block theory crafting. We've seen people just wholesale making things up on Reddit. This has a lot more substance to it. The article linked on Reddit that you pointed me to, Merc, links back to a source at NeoGAF who provided a number of links. I did some investigation just trying to see if I could verify whether these were actual links from the E3 Expo website. I could not confirm that. If that link that is described by the NeoGAF user, Rusty, was on their site, as he said, then they have taken it down at this point. It's no longer there. That said, the maps that he provides of the convention center do seem to be legitimate in that they match up to the real convention center, as far as I can tell, obviously having never been there myself. But they also are sourced from a company called GES. And hitting that company's homepage up, they are your global face-to-face marketing partner. So this would appear to be a huge global event marketing company that does all kinds of exhibition and presentation setup for major companies around the world. So, I mean, that seems pretty legit to me. I've looked over their site. They seem totally on the level. As far as I can tell, we can take these for being what they are. Now, obviously, I could be wrong. We might find out tomorrow that I'm wrong. But yeah, I'm psyched. I also expected this to happen at E3, but this is just exciting. And it's got me looking at ticket prices and wondering wondering if the trip is worth making.
I wish I could head out to E3. I think it'd be fantastic to be there for such an event, but I don't know if that is a possibility for me unless anybody wants to send me some free E3 tickets. Anyone at Bungie? Yeah, I'll shill for you guys. I promise.
We can be bribed.
Yes, easily too. I mean, hell, send me a fucking $10 gift card to Starbucks and I'll say some good shit about your game. Temporarily, but I require more after that.
It's easy to get him to buy him there for 5 minutes, but if you want to keep him on the line.
Exactly.
So yeah,
so
that's that, I think.
that's basically all I've got to say though about being a shill, about getting free tickets to E3, about any of the updates that are coming. Like I said, this was a miscellaneous episode this week. Kind of short, kind of sweet, kind of to the point. Wasn't as much massive breakdown, was a little bit more random than normal. And then I'm going to be on my business trip, so hopefully this will be out tomorrow evening, tomorrow being Monday, of course. So hopefully you guys will be seeing this Tuesday evening while I'm on the airplane up to Atlanta. SECO, Southeastern Conference of Ophthalmology, I believe. If any of you guys are into eye doctor stuff, come look me up. I should be there. But yeah, Kutch, you got anything else to add?
I had I guess maybe just a couple of things to throw out there, just some interesting tidbits looking at Crucible data right now. Obviously the meta is pretty established. We're really seeing it settle down, and I just kind of wanted to throw out some semi, so maybe some mini breakdown kind of stats at people. Obviously, pulling some of this from DestinyTracker.com, got to rep them a little bit. The current PvP meta in terms of the guns that people are using to be aware of right now, obviously, going into Iron Banner, I'm expecting that this is going to hold steady. We're going to see a lot of Wyrmwood, that's at 8.3% of the population taken into the Crucible. No Land Beyond at 5% over the whole Crucible. Aes Luna at 6% and the Palindrome at 5.5%. Icebreaker, of course, very popular, although, gosh, that high zoom, I don't know how you manage it. 3.1% of the population is using that, so you'll see it in a lot of games. And then Mida, ever a perennial favorite of Guardians, although I really feel like it's a bit of a shadow of what it used to be. 4.3% of the population taking Mida out. Trials is a whole other story, though. In terms of primary usage in Trials, I did mention that No Land Beyond is the single most popular primary weapon. It's pretty hefty. Mida comes in second there, but then we've got a whole bunch of hand cannons. And actually, hand cannons as a weapon type are the most popular weapon in Trials right now, followed by pulse rifles, scout rifles, and then sniper rifles. Just the fact that we see snipers there is somewhere between hilarious and sad to me. But special weapons are, of course, incredibly predictable in Trials right now. Wyrmwood is far and away the most popular, followed by Trespasser, and then the Matador 64 holding it up in third place. Overall, sidearms are more than 50% of the weapons taken into Trials in terms of the special weapons equipped. There's a from the sample that we pulled, not counting we didn't get the stats on everything here, but out of 196,000 Guardians sampled, 114,000 were wielding sidearms. So yeah. And then of course you're going to see a lot of snipers too. 50,000 Guardians out of that sample size were wielding sniper rifles instead of sidearms. We had some shotgun holdouts and a very small number of fusion rifle. Respect, Foob Nation. Respect.
Seriously, I don't know how you do it at this point in time. I cannot be using a fusion rifle in the Crucible. For me, it's sniper, which is okay with me because I love sniper, or sidearm, and that's just about it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a fact for sure. I have been killed, I think, now twice. I think last time we recorded, I said I'd only been killed by one fusion rifle. I think I ran into one other guy this week who had a fusion rifle and did kill me with it. So, yeah, it takes guts. So I can only respect it. I hope that Bungie addresses fusion rifles. I hope that's the one thing Josh didn't mention, is that fusion rifles need... I don't know what they need, but they need some kind of love.
Some help.
Yeah.
A lot of it.
Yeah. That's all I got. I'm done. I'm out. All
right. Well, see you guys next week after I get back from my fancy trip. And hopefully we'll have a lot more to discuss post-Supremacy Rise of Iron.
Yeah.
Supremacy Iron Banner. Yes. Rise of Iron is long in the past. Long in the past. I don't know why that even got stuck in my head. But post-Supremacy Iron Banner, yes. We'll be back to talk more. So thank you guys for tuning in. Bye.
Yeah, peace out, Guardians. Do remember to check us out at Destiny MVP and check out all of the other great podcasts on the Destiny Tracker Podcast Network. Love you guys. Bye.